Okay, so for this next lecture, we're going to be talking
Which
about
is
electrophilic aromatic substitution. If you have an aromatic ring
the
like
synthesis of
benzene,
azo violet
in the presence of a good electrophile, the first step in the reaction mechanism is exactly the same as if you would see
and
an addition reaction across
azo
a double
violet
bond.
Is a dye.
The benzene ring attacks the electrophile, and you get the carbocation intermediate.
And human beings have been messing around with dyes for an extremely long period of time. Now, throughout
now,
most human history,
if this were an addition
dyes,
reaction, this next
came
step
from natural sources,
would
primarily
be
plants,
nucleophile,
some animals
coming
and
in,
other things, but they were
attacking
natural sources.
The cation
this meant
to
that,
give you the addition product.
Certain dyes were limited, and many of them were expensive. But
in
so
aromatic systems, we do
to,
not see this reaction. Instead,
to a
the nucleophile
full-blooded
behaves
science
as a
where,
base,
rules and everything,
removes the proton.
Human beings really started to understand what chemistry actually was.
This the
started
net result
happening
of this
right around the end
is that one of the hydrogens on the aromatic ring is substituted for by this
century.
Electrophile.
And of course,
so now the first question is why
looking at,
does this
ways
reaction
to
occur to result in the substitution instead of addition? Well,
push
so when the
forward.
Aromatic ring attacks the electrophile,
and
it temporarily loses
many
aromaticity.
Areas.
And if you remember, aromaticity
dye
is
synthesis
a very
was,
stable,
now,
stable molecule.
In
so
1856,
temporarily
man
losing
by the
its
name
okay.
Of William
but Perkin. If the nucleophile attacks the cation resulting in the addition product, that
a young English
aromaticity is now permanently lost. So the activation energy for this just way, way
German
too high.
Chemist
so
by
instead,
the name of Professor Hoffman,
you get the substitution reaction,
at the time,
which returns
they were
the ring
to
an aromatic
quinine.
State, much more stable.
If you don't know what
okay,
quinine
so
is, it's an antimalarial.
Substitution of benzene by a good electrophile is
known,
fairly straightforward. It does not matter which proton
malaria.
You choose.
And
you
of course,
basically
malaria
always
was
end
a
up
real
with,
problem for
the monosubstituted
many
product.
Parts of the world.
The issue with this reaction comes into play after you get monosubstitution. When you put a functional group
to this day.
On the aromatic ring,
but
so we're no longer talking
the
about
idea
benzene,
that
we're talking about some
this
other
group
molecule.
Had was that if they can synthesize
how does this
quinine,
functional group affect this type of reaction?
It would make it more readily available.
Well, when you put a functional group on the aromatic ring,
the
it affects the substitution
and,
reaction two ways. The first
Central
is in
and South
rate,
America,
that
so
is, how fast does this reaction occur? Basically, what we do is we set benzene as our standard,
and then distribute.
And we say if
so it was
we put a functional group on the aromatic ring, does the reaction
so
happen faster
they
or slower?
Synthesize
than
it,
benzene.
Then, of course.
And then the second way,
lots of money. That was their,
in which substitute this reaction is affected,
forces,
is what we call directional
it
control
would also
or
really
positional.
Help in terms of providing. This
that is where on the aromatic ring
the rest of the world.
Does the substitution occur?
And
so let's talk about the first
unfortunately,
effect, and that is rate. Does the reaction rate happen faster or slower?
Well beyond.
So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to define what our functional groups are. And we can classify our functional groups into two major categories. We can call them
very complex
electron releasing,
and this just simply wasn't within. The realm of the abilities
and electron
of those particular chemists. And that didn't prevent them from trying.
If we have
Perkins
a
tried,
functional group on the ring,
fail.
We'll just call them an electron functional group. That's a functional group that withdraws electron density out of the ring towards itself.
During this
so then we ask
process.
The question, will those types of molecules
that
have a rate slower or faster than benzene?
Is,
then the answer is that it
is a part
slower
of the yeast
than
rate.
And the reason, again, has to do with this very first step. The very first step is the ring acting as a nucleophile attacking the electrophile. In order
so
for you to be a nucleophile, you have
at the
to
end
have
of the day,
electron
he
density.
Started cleaning up all
and
the
so if you have a functional group that is drawing electron density out of her, you're in essence decreasing
the
nucleophilicity of the aromatic ring.
Dark.
then those functional groups have rates slower than benzene. And so we pretend to call electron withdrawing functional groups.
Decided to try something, and so he took a piece of cloth, dipped it in the solution, and
so the nice thing about having two basic categories, you've got electron releasing and electron withdrawing, when it comes to how do they affect
rare dye.
But we've already defined how they affect with electron withdrawing.
The only
so that means that electron releasing are the exact opposite. These are functional groups that release electron density into the ring. Increase the nucleophilicity of the ring, and they have rates faster than benzene. And so these are often
and in fact hatched. He had accidentally synthesized.
Okay, so how do these functional groups affect rate? It's fairly straightforward. Nothing too difficult in terms of trying to figure out
class of them. As you can see, here's the structure.
How it happens and so forth. Now let's talk about the second one.
As I said, this
direction
is
or
the
position.
Very first. And
so, if we have
with this accidental discovery, Perkins went on to become one of the pillars in
and we
the industrial revolution.
Do the reaction. There are three possible products that can form. We're only talking about monosubstitution.
One of the areas is, of course,
so
the textile industry. And if you look,
we can have.
Big name
substitution
revolution
occurred.
Right,
this position
he was directly
this is called ortho.
In the synthesis
we can
of
have substitution
textile industry.
Occur.
So once the first synthetic
position,
dye
this
was made,
meta,
the
last but not least
started trying to figure out what was going on, and eventually they really learned how color
occur. In this position.
And,
this is called para.
Structure are related.
So there are three possible
so
products, and then
made, kind of
the question then becomes, okay, if I have a functional group on
the
aromatic
today,
ring, what is the distribution of these products going to be?
Dyes are synthetic.
And there are basically two extremes to this. You can either have a 1-to-1-to-1 ratio of all three, or you can have 100% of one and zero of the other two.
There
or you're going to be somewhere in between those two extremes.
Made to synthesize quinine.
Now, unfortunately, answering this, trying to figure out why
however,
we would get one particular isomer
cheaper
over the other is a little bit more involved.
Natural source
trying to determine
it
why
to
it's a ring activator or a ring deactivator.
So
the first thing that we have to do is we have to look at this carbocation intermediate a little bit more.
But anyways, now almost all dyes are synthetic, and one of the largest classes of dyes are known as the azo dyes.
Let's just
the basic structure of an azo dye
have substitution occur in the ortho position.
Two aromatic rings stuck together.
So when it occurs in the ortho position, we get this initial
and
carbocation.
What this double bond
intermediate.
Does it, is
now the thing is that in an aromatic system, this is not what we'd call a localized carbocation.
Rings,
that is.
Remember,
it's not stuck on this carbon alone. It's delocalized
the gap between
because
the
of
the smaller,
conjugation
smaller,
of the aromatic ring.
So
it can spread the charge throughout the ring
color,
due to some resonance stability. And so let's draw some resonance structures. So here's our first one.
And hopefully you can kind of understand
then
why.
This one.
Because all you have to do is put different functional groups in the different positions on the aromatic ring. And in essence, you get a whole new dye. The synthesis of azo dyes is
one.
A two-step process, and it starts with what's called diazotization.
So you can see we have three resonance structures here.
Mean. So for us,
if we have substitution occur in the ortho position,
it is p-nitroaniline. In the presence of hydrochloric acid, sodium nitrite.
Again, we can draw some resonance structures.
Produce the azide salt.
There's one.
So this is the first step. So Then you do the second step of azodisynthesis, which is called diazonium coupling.
So with ortho substitution, we get three resonances.
In essence, what this is,
or excuse me, with meta,
substitution
we get three resonance structures.
All
right, now let's look at para.
And you add to it your second aromatic molecule.
So here's one,
which for us is resorcinol. It's also known as 1,3-dihydroxybenzene.
Here's two.
And it is also sometimes called 3-hydroxyphenol. Multiple names.
And then three. Here's three.
Its common name is resorcinol. And this is an electrophilic substitution reaction.
With the functional group on the aromatic ring, if you get ortho, meta, or para substitution, we get three resonance structures to help stabilize the carbocation. Okay, so now let's use this and try, and again, the whole purpose of all of this is we're trying to figure out which one of these particular isomers is going to be the preferred product during the substitution reaction. Instead of FX, let's call it an electron withdrawing
reaction,
functional group.
Even though these are ortho para,
and now let's define what an electron withdrawing functional group looks like. For instance,
for
a very powerful electron withdrawing functional group
on the aromatic ring. So take a look at that.
Is the nitro group.
Let's focus on this alcohol group first. So this particular hydrogen.
If we have this electron withdrawing functional group on the aromatic
ortho,
ring, the nitro group,
how does this carbon dictate which one of these isomers is going to be produced?
And what we have to do is we have to, let's specifically look at this isomer.
That carbon.
Or excuse me, this carbocation
intermediate.
Excuse me, this carbocation resonance structure of the carbocation intermediate. Sometimes you have to remember, it always gets a little bit crazy when you're trying to single out a resonance structure. This is not something you can isolate. It's only part of the whole. And every now and then, it gets a little bit crazy when you're trying to talk about them and focus on them. So again, remember, we're isolating this, but this is really just an exercise because you actually cannot isolate it. So let's draw this resonance structure. Well, let's put the nitro group as the functional group on the aromatic.
There's one minor hiccup to this, and that is product analysis. We can't do our standard product analysis of melting point because the product decomposes before it melts. The melting point is out, and the IR is beyond messy.
Okay.
So we're not.
So with this resonance structure,
so we're going to analyze.
We have a carbon with a full positive charge on
different.
It.
The first thing,
and
that
is bonded to a nitrogen with a positive charge on it.
Does our product behave like
and
a dye?
Remember, in
dye,
nature doesn't like positive next to positive.
Should.
That's not going to be very stabilizing. So, when you think about these resonance structures, remember, a resonance structure is something that helps stabilize whatever form that particular molecule is in.
The other thing we're going to do,
and so this is a cation, and we're asking,
multiple or many,
does this particular resonance structure help stabilize this cation intermediate? Well, with these first two resonance structures, the positive charge is on these two carbons, and you can basically say they're the same in terms of stabilizing the resonance structure. But this resonance structure, it exists, but it's not going to be as stabilizing as these two.
Does our product?
So when it comes to an electron withdrawing functional group, when you get
And so that
substitution
is
that occurs in the ortho position.
Synthesis. Again, like I said,
we have two
there are not a lot
resonance structures that help stabilize it, and one that's not so good at stabilizing. Again, it is a resonance structure, but we're thinking in terms of how well does it help stabilize it, and it just doesn't help as much.
So that brings us to the end.
So now if we look at meta-substitution, well, with meta-substitution, that positive charge is never on the carbon attached to the functional group. So all three of these resonance structures help stabilize that carbocation intermediate, in essence, the same. So you have three stabilizing resonance structures that
I also have
at all about the same amount.
Regular
now, if we look at parasubstitution, well, again, these two resonance structures, the positive charge is on these two carbons, but with this one,
if you have any questions,
we are again in that situation where the positive charge is attached
until next time
to the functional group. So if we draw that resonance structure out again with our nitro group, we see that we have the positive next to the positive again. So just like in this resonance structure, it exists, but it doesn't help stabilize it as much as these two. So electron withdrawing substitution in the para position has two that help stabilize it, and again, that one that is not as helpful as the other two. So with this information, we can conclude that when you have an electron withdrawing functional group, not only is it an electron, or excuse me, a ring deactivator that have rates slower than benzene, they are also what we call meta directors. That is, when you have an electron withdrawing functional group and you isolate the products, the dominant product in the reaction is going to be the meta product. Okay. Now let's switch to an electron releasing functional group. Well, what is an example of an electron releasing functional group? And a good one is the alcohol. And again, in order to figure out how this affects the substitution, we again have to look at this intermediate. Now we'll draw this intermediate with the alcohol in place. Okay, so this is this intermediate with the alcohol as the functional group. Now, unlike this intermediate where we had two positive charge, that's not something that nature wants to have happen. The difference here is oxygen has these two lone pairs of electrons, and it can actually donate one of those pairs of electrons to form a fourth resonance structure. So with an electron releasing functional group, when you have ortho substitution, you have 1, 2, 3, and now 4 resonance structures that help stabilize it. Now again, we know oxygen doesn't like to be positively charged. So if you think in terms of, well, which one of these, you know, helps more than the others, well then these three are going to be helpful more than this one, because we know oxygen doesn't like to have that positive charge, but it is still a fourth resonance structure. You have more resonance structures to help stabilize it than you do in like the electron withdrawing functional group. So with meta, again, because that positive charge is never on the functional group attached to the aromatic ring, we still only have 3. And finally, with para, we can draw that important resonance structure again. And so again, just like in ortho substitution, we are going to get that fourth stabilizing resonance structure. So para gives us four. So electron releasing functional groups are known as ring activators, and they are also called orthopara directors. Okay, so I do want, before I continue, I want to focus on one kind of special class of ring activators, and these are the alkyl groups. So for instance, let's have ortho substitution occur with something like toluene. And let's draw this third resonance structure here. Now, alkyl groups, toluene, ethyl benzene, etc., these are ring activators and they are orthopara directors. But unlike something like oxygen, where it doesn't have, the methyl group doesn't have those lone pairs of electrons, so how do we get stability from this particular intermediate? And if we look at this carbocation resonance structure intermediate, we see that this is a tertiary carbocation. And so these two resonances help stabilize that carbocation intermediate fine. This one helps it stabilize it really fine, because in a tertiary carbocation, you have hyperconjugation and so forth. So that's how things like methyl and ethyl and all your alkyl groups can be ring activators and orthopara directors, even though they don't have the lone pair of electrons to form that fourth stabilizing resonance structure. Okay, so with the electrophilic aromatic substitution experiment, we're going to divide it into two halves. So the first half is going to deal with how do functional groups affect rate, and the second half will look at direction or positional control. And so the first is the rate experiment, the rate of bromination. And we are going to brominate five different molecules. We're going to brominate phenol, 4-bromophenol, anisole, acid annelid, and diphenyl ether. Okay, so these five molecules, we are going to add bromine, and the general reaction is this: ARH plus Br2 goes to ArBr plus HBr. So this reaction first is very similar to one experiment we did a few weeks ago in the stereochemistry experiment. In the free radical substitution experiment, where we brominated different arenes and we tried to figure out which one would be faster. So it's the same basic experiment, only in this case we're looking at the electrophilic aromatic substitution rather than free radical substitution. So one of the things that is very different about this particular experiment is the solvent. And the solvent is 15 molar acetic acid. And that's an odd solvent. Normally, when we think about solvents, it's water, ethanol, methanol, dichloromethane, things like that, but not 15 molar acetic acid. So the question is, why are we using this particular solvent? Well, the first rule whenever you're using a solvent is that everything has to be soluble in it for the reaction to occur. That's kind of it. It's a must. If the solvent doesn't allow for the solubility of one of the reactants, the reaction doesn't happen. So everything is soluble in this particular solvent. But there are other solvents that would work as well, dichloromethane, to name one of them. So why specifically are we using 15 molar acetic acid? Well, when we did the Grignard reaction, we talked about the fact that that particular solvent also needed to be aprotic because of the fact that the Grignard reagent was very basic. So the solvent had to fulfill another role, and that was it had to make sure that it didn't react with the reactant. We're kind of taking a slight reverse course in this particular choice, because if you remember, I talked about that very first step in the reaction mechanism is the aromatic ring attacks the electrophile and temporarily loses aromaticity. It's not what we would call a small activation energy. It's temporarily losing aromaticity. That's pretty high. Now, if we took bromine and dichloromethane, the reaction would work, but it wouldn't necessarily happen in a relatively reasonable amount of time. So one of the things that we have to do is we want to speed it up, and that's what the acetic acid is doing. So if we take bromine and we just kind of draw it out and we add something like a proton, which 15 molar acetic acid has lots of, we can form a partial bond with this proton in one of the bromines. Well, what that does is that shifts electron density from this bromine towards this bromine, making this bromine a little bit more positive, having a partial positive charge associated with it. In other words, we're making it a better electrophile. So by using 15 molar acetic acid, we are in essence activating our bromine, if you want to call it that, allowing this reaction to occur within a reasonable amount of time. And so that's the purpose behind using the 15 molar acetic acid. And so this reaction is very easy to do. It's just setting up the test tubes, running them and looking for the disappearance of the red color once the reaction is run to completion. So that is the rate of substitution. Rate of bromination in the electrophilic aromatic substitution experiment, which is the synthesis of azo violet. And azo violet is a dye, and human beings have been messing around with dyes for an extremely long period of time. Now, throughout most human history, dyes came from natural sources, primarily plants, some animals and other things, but they were natural sources. And this meant that certain dyes were limited, and many of them were expensive. And so when chemistry started to mature into a full-blooded science where rules and everything, you know, human beings really started to understand what chemistry actually was, this started happening right around the end of the 18th century and the beginning of the 19th century. And of course, the chemists were looking at ways to use chemistry to push society forward. And they were looking at many, many different areas. And dye synthesis was, of course, one of them. Now, in 1856, a man by the name of William Perkins, he was a young English chemist and working for
a German chemist by the name of Professor Hoffman, and at the time they were attempting to synthesize quinine. And if you don't know what quinine is, it's an antimalarial agent. At that time, it was the only known treatment for malaria. And of course, malaria was a real problem for many parts of the world at that time. And unfortunately, malaria is still a problem in some of the areas around the world, even to this day. But the idea that this group had was that if they can synthesize quinine, it would make it more readily available. Quinine comes from a natural tree in Central and South America. So you can imagine in the 1800s, it was difficult to isolate and then distribute around the world. So it was extremely expensive. And so they figured if they could synthesize it, then of course they would make lots of money. That was their one of their major driving forces. But it would also really, really help in terms of providing this extremely important drug to the rest of the world. And unfortunately, quinine was well beyond the methods and abilities of chemists at that time. This is the structure of quinine, and as you can see, it's a very complex molecule, and this just simply wasn't within the realm of the abilities of those particular chemists. And that didn't prevent them from trying, and of course Perkins tried, but his method failed. Now, fortunately, Perkins stumbled across something during this process. The story goes is that he attempted this reaction in his apartment over the Easter break, and the reaction didn't work. He tried it multiple times and it just didn't simply work. And so at the end of the day, he started cleaning up all of his glassware, and he used alcohol to clean up his glassware. And when he added the alcohol to the reaction vessels, the story goes is that the solution turned a dark, dark purple. And Perkins noticed this and decided to try something. And so he took a piece of cloth, dipped it in the solution, and it dyed that particular cloth purple. Now, if you know anything about purple in terms of dyes, it's an extremely rare dye. And it was very, very expensive. In essence, the only people that could wear purple were the wealthy. And so Perkins knew immediately that he had stumbled on something potentially groundbreaking. And in fact, he had. He had accidentally synthesized the very first synthetic dye. Today, it's called Perkins Moth. Or Mauvine A. They're a class of them. And as you can see, here's the structure here. And as I said, this is the very first synthetic dye. And with this accidental discovery, Perkins went on to become one of the pillars in the Industrial Revolution. And this started happening right around the mid-1800s. And one of the areas was, of course, the textile industry. And if you look at the big names in the Industrial Revolution, Perkins is right there because he was directly involved in the synthesis of dyes for the textile industry. So once the first synthetic dye was made, the chemists started trying to figure out what was going on. And eventually they really learned how color and structure are related. And so once the first one was made, it just kind of dominoed after that to the point of today, where almost all dyes are synthetic. One of the interesting little twists of history, I'll circle back to quinine for just a little bit. There was an eventual method made to synthesize quinine in the 1940s. However, it's now cheaper to isolate quinine from the natural source than it is to make it in the lab. It's kind of one of those funny little twists of history where, you know, what completely reverses. But anyways, now almost all dyes are synthetic. And one of the largest classes of dyes are known as the azo dyes. The basic structure of an azo dye is two aromatic rings stuck together between a nitrogen-nitrogen double bond. And what this double bond does is that it allows conjugation to exist between the two aromatic rings. And as you remember, as you get extended conjugation, the gap between the HOMO and the LUMO starts getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And so this extended conjugation is what leads to color. And the azo dyes is an extremely large family of dyes. And hopefully you can kind of understand why, because all you have to do is put different functional groups in the different positions on the aromatic ring. And in essence, you get a whole new dye. The synthesis of azo dyes is a two-step process. And it starts with what's called diazotization. And that is where you take your aromatic amine. So for us, it is p-nitroaniline in the presence of hydrochloric acid and sodium nitrite, to produce the azide salt. So this is the first step. So then you do the second step of azo-dye synthesis, which is called diazonium coupling. And in essence, what this is an electrophilic aromatic substitution reaction. So we take our azide salt and you add to it your second aromatic molecule, which for us is resorcinol. It's also known as 1,3-dihydroxybenzene, and it is also sometimes called 3-hydroxyphenol. So multiple names. We call it, its common name is resorcinol. And this is an electrophilic aromatic substitution reaction. Alcohols are orthopara directors, and this is the carbon that attacks the nitrogen, giving us the final product. Azo-violet. And in fact, this is the only product from this reaction. Even though these are orthopara directors, there is only one possible reaction product when you add these two molecules together. And the reason for that has to do with the orientation of the two alcohol groups on the aromatic ring. So if we take a quick look at that, draw it like this. So let's focus on this alcohol group first. So this particular hydrogen, or carbon, excuse me, is ortho, and this one is ortho to this alcohol, and this carbon is para to this alcohol. Now if we look at this alcohol, that carbon and that carbon are ortho, and that carbon is para. So because of the orientation of the two functional groups, they are directing the reaction to exactly the same three carbons. And these two carbons are identical to each other. And so because the reaction is not going to occur at this position because there's just too much steric hindrance, etc. there, the only reaction that's going to happen is at this position. And again, since these two carbons are identical to each other, you get the same product regardless. Okay, so again, azo violet synthesis, very simple reaction, does not take much time. There is one minor hiccup to this, and that is product analysis. We can't do our standard product analysis of melting point because the product decomposes before it melts. So melting point is out, and the IR is beyond messe. So we're not going to take an IR. So we're going to analyze our product a little bit differently. The first thing that we're going to do is see, does our product behave like a dye? Azo violet is a dye, and it should dye cotton. And so that's one of the things that we're going to see. And so we're going to take a piece of cotton and see if it dyes it orange. And the other thing we're going to do is take a look at the pH. Many azo dyes have different colors depending upon the pH. And azo violet is no different here. So under acidic conditions, azo violet is orange. And under basic conditions, azo violet is purple. So we're simply going to see, does our product turn purple under basic conditions and remain orange under acidic conditions? And so that is the azo violet synthesis. Again, like I said, very simple reaction. There are not a lot of difficulties associated with it. And very fast, etc. Product analysis is also, again, very, very simple. Okay, so that brings us the end to the synthesis of azo violet. And again, our office hours for 128L are on Thursdays from 2 to 3. And if you're in 220C, the office hours are on Mondays and Thursdays from 5 to 6. And again, I also have the regular office hours that anybody can attend on Tuesdays and Wednesdays from 5 to 6. So if you have any questions, either send me an email or come to the office hours and ask them then. Until next time, we will see you later. Bye-bye.